venerable game show, The Price is Right, kicks off its 43rd season on Monday. Music is from that. That's the cliffhanger yodeling song, a longtime favorite here at the Ideas Network. The Price is Right is just one of the many long-lasting quiz show successes.
So we're taking a look at the enduring appeal of the TV game show, why the genre has stuck around so long, and we want to hear from you. What is your all-time favorite TV game show? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org.
Robert Thompson joins us now. He's professor of television and popular culture and the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we go into the history of the game show, what is it about The Price is Right that's kept it on the air all these years?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, it started in 1956. That's a long time ago. And it had a little break between 1965 and 1972. And then it came back in 72 as The New Price is Right. They didn't keep that new for too long. And it's been going ever since. And in so many ways, it's just one step away from a big, long info. I mean, it's a constant introduction of products and a couple of words about the great things about those products. Then people give you the prices of those products. This is about as close as a television series gets to being the same as the commercials that interrupt it.
And is that part of why game shows like that work? They're partly self-funding because the advertising is built right into the show?
Well, that certainly helps the economy of the game show. I mean, game shows tend to be really, for one thing, they're cheap to make because the set isn't that expensive. You're paying a host and an announcer, but you're not paying the talent, which tends to come on down from the audience or someplace like that. So they are very, very inexpensive. I remember I was on the set of Bob Barker's Price is Right Now, and that wheel they used to spin before the age of HD television looked like something you could have made in your seventh grade arts and crafts class. It was like glittering numbers pasted onto a little drum.
Well, it looks so impressive on TV.
Yeah, it does. That was the great thing about pre-HD TV is you could make garbage look pretty good.
Well, and the show survived retirement. You mentioned Bob Barker. He left. The show's still there. How important in a game show is the host versus the game itself?
Well, I think the host is really important, although obviously not all important, because we went from Bill Cullen on The Price is Right to the classic Bob Barker and now to Drew Carey, and it's still going strong. The same with Jeopardy. Alex Trebek seems like he's been doing that forever, but once upon a time there was someone else hosting that as well. So I guess the game is more important insofar as a lot of these games have survived host changes. But at the same time, you can't just put any old person into that host position and expect it to work. The other thing, strangely enough, that I think is crucial is time slot. Game shows have had a long history of being on in prime time. Matter of fact, at one point in their history, game shows were the most popular shows of all on primetime. But they don't seem to be able to last as long. A game show that's on primetime can do really well, but it lasts a couple of years and it fizzles out. Then it can go into afternoon or, in the old days, morning, and it can seem to then last forever. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is a perfect example. It was a huge hit in 1999 and remained a huge hit for a few years, and then it fizzled on primetime, went to now the most cities you see it about 5, 6, 7 o'clock, and it could go forever. The same with Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and Price is Right. The longevity seems to have to happen before 8 o'clock. When you cross that threshold, your lifespan speeds up really quickly.
So the game show flame burns brightest in primetime, but it burns out the fastest.
That's exactly right.
Well, you had mentioned to me earlier today that even, you think of I Love Lucy as a dominant TV show, that actually had serious competition from primetime game shows?
Yeah, in the mid to late 1950s, the big money game show emerges on television, and we'll get to a second why it happened then. And when it emerged, audiences went completely crazy. The $64,000 question became such a hit that, first off, it knocked I Love Lucy out of the number one slot in the Nielsen ratings, and newspapers, including the New York Times, used to have little tables each day in the newspaper as to what contestants won how much money on which quiz shows the following night. I mean, this was tantamount to people going to the newspaper in the morning for sports scores. Huh. You had game show scores. The reason those emerged at that point is radio, back when radio was the dominant genre, when radio had game shows and soap operas and cop shows and all the rest of it before TV, quiz shows had been popular. And then federal communication rules named quiz shows where you won money to be to fall under the lottery laws. In other words, you weren't allowed to do them. Well, that got fixed sometime in the 1950s, and quiz shows that gave money were allowed again. And what the TV networks decided to do was take the ideas of the radio quiz shows and simply make them much, much huger stakes. So on radio, it had been the $64 question. For the TV version, they simply added three zeros to the $64 question. At its peak, if you lost the $64,000 question, your consolation prize was a brand new Cadillac. That was what you got if you lost.
Wow.
That shows you how big these things were. And in 1956, that was $64,000 was a whole lot of money.
Well, thinking about that and then that surge you mentioned of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, is that something that can capture attention for a while, a really big potential payoff?
Well, it can. I mean, I don't know if you remember back in the summer of 99, but I remember you could not go into a restaurant, and as you were seated, you heard people saying, "Is that your final answer?" from like every table that you passed.
True.
That had so totally penetrated the American idiom. And when it first started, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire would play like eight nights in a row, and then it would go away for a couple of months, and then it would come back. So that it was almost like you'd hear this was going to be on, and it was like you'd go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire vacation. And for a while, all the top rankings of that entire week would be episodes of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But like you pointed out, that it was a supernova, but it couldn't sustain itself, and it's still going now on daytime. But in primetime, it just didn't last.
And then the lower money shows that have a lot of staying power, Price is Right. I mean, if you win the big sweepstakes, okay, but we're talking small amounts of money through most of it. Jeopardy, not big payoffs on a daily basis. What is it about them that can keep the daily trickle of money going and still keep people's attention?
Yeah, well, I think part of it is that the kind of attention that we expect television to get from us is different at 5 o'clock in the evening, 6 o'clock in the evening, and different at 10 o'clock in the morning. In that, in a lot of cases, I think a good portion of the American public watches Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy in a different room from the television set in which it's on. And I know nobody, all of my students who now watch all of their TV on their laptops and tablets and so forth, I have never seen somebody watching Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy staring at a laptop. I mean, it seems to be one of those shows that's really a really popular show not to actually watch. You're in the kitchen preparing a meal. You're getting ready for the transition of the afternoon into the evening and whatever that might mean in a household with a lot of people. And in some ways, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy is the perfect show not to pay that much attention to. The problem is when you put those things on in primetime is a time where we actually do pay attention to things. And if you pay too much attention to an episode of the Wheel of Fortune or Price is Right, the whole thing collapses before your very eyes.
Let's go to a caller.
It's a bad painting. If you stay far away from it, it can can look quite beautiful. If you start to scrutinize it, not so much.
Let's go to a caller at 800-642-1234. We've got Mike in Green Lake County. Mike, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your show?
Oh, it was Jeopardy with Art Fleming, the original host.
So do you
I remember my parents watching that.
Did you like him better than Trebek?
Well, I do because I remember the early show, the contestants were always like molecular biologists or nuclear physicists, or, and they were super, super difficult questions, and you felt that if you got any of the questions right whatsoever or even close to it, you were so smart.
Mike,
do you remember who the announcer was with Art Fleming?
Art Fleming.
Yeah, that, you know, he was the host, but do you remember who his announcer was?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't.
The late Don Pardo,
who just died
last week or a couple weeks ago.
No way, I hadn't heard that.
That was my era, too. When if I even hear Art Fleming's voice, I'm 7 years old, homesick from school, watching Jeopardy again.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, Mike, sharing those memories. And Don Pardo, I hadn't heard he had passed away.
Yeah, just a few days ago.
And he stuck around into the Alex Trebek era, too, didn't he?
Am I wrong? Did he go to Jeopardy? I mean, he certainly went to Saturday Night Live and
right.
did all of that. I think he did. I think he did announce Jeopardy for in Alex Trebek as well. But I think of him as the Fleming era. Well, it's interesting now. Yeah, the caller pointed out an interesting thing. Whereas Jeopardy was always kind of the intellectuals game show or quiz show. And I always thought Jeopardy was, even though it wasn't nearly as hard as the questions back in the 50s, for the later era, it was almost, I think one of the reasons for success is you had all of those people starting after the Second World War who started going to college, who never would have before. So we had all these people with incredibly good liberal arts educations, and they would go on to become doctors or lawyers or accountants, things that you never really used your liberal education in. And Jeopardy was a way you could finally apply all of that knowledge that you got in college that you didn't really get much chance to apply in other places. You could at least feel smart in Jeopardy.
Pop culture expert Robert Thompson is with us from Syracuse University. He's telling the story of the history and the appeal of TV game shows as The Price is Right kicks off another in a long line of seasons.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you ever been hooked on a game show? Have you ever been a contestant? What do you like or dislike about them? Ever been home marooned on the couch sick and couldn't stop watching game shows? What did you like about it? You can email talk@wpr.org or call 800-642-1234. We're continuing our conversation with Robert Thompson of Syracuse University. He's a TV and popular culture expert there. And we're looking at the appeal of TV game shows with daytime legend The Price is Right kicking off its 43rd season on Monday.
And you can join at 800-642-1234. What's been your favorite TV game show of all time? What do you like or dislike about them? Do you watch them intently or are they background noise? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Steve on the line in Appleton. Steve, hi.
How you guys doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Steve?
Well, it's interesting you were talking about this particular subject because I'm connected to it in a couple of different ways. I was on a game show as a singer for 3 years, a show that was hosted by Tom Kennedy called Name That Tune.
No way.
I'm sure you're very familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
So I was the boy singer on that. But more importantly, my last name is March Torme. I'm Mel Torme's son, but my stepfather is the guy you were talking about, the host of the $64,000 Question Show. I was brought up by Hal March.
No kidding. So you've got game shows in your blood. Do you have any inside secrets?
I'm afraid so.
Do you have any inside secrets from that experience to share with us to win if we get on one of these?
How do you get on? Well, you know, it's funny. You were talking about the fact that the country literally would come to a standstill to find out if somebody had won the $64,000. And as you mentioned back then, that was a huge amount of money. And we were living, I was being brought up in Westchester County, New York, and my dad told me, he said, yeah, they would actually interrupt the Yankee games towards the end to see who won. And that's how important they were. And, you know, people that I meet say, oh, isn't that the show that they did game show about? And I said, well, yes, kind of. And so they said, well, so was your dad on the tape there? I said, no.
No, okay.
My dad was a straight shooter. I said, but As soon as the $64,000 challenge went down, they just got scared and said, all right, you're all coming off the air because we just can't afford to have a scandal.
Steve, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And Robert Thompson, that quiz show scandal, can you talk about the impact of that? Tell us a little bit about it and the impact it had.
Well, first of all, having to be on the radio with somebody who was a singer on Name That Tune, that was a special moment for me. So
me
that
too.
Was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, the game shows, we don't realize that it was game shows that became one of the most important, influential moments in the history of American television. These things come on in the late 1950s. They become incredibly popular. 21, $64,000 question, tic-tac-toe, dotto. And then all of a sudden, evidence begins to come out that some of these things are fixed from soup to nuts. In some cases, people had all of the answers in the beginning. Charles Van Doren, who had become a star, cover of Time magazine, he was hosting the Today Show thanks to his win on 21, then denies it and then comes back and says he was lying. And not only did the networks pretty much knock all the game shows off of primetime, not all of them, but most of them, but they all kinds of other rules came as well. They took over ownership of most of the nonfiction programming, changed the way that kind of thing was done. Most advertising now didn't do full sponsorship of single shows. It really changed the industry in significant ways. And from that time forward, people thought television was a lying medium, which many people to this day still continue to think.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Tom now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hello. I had told your producer that the two that I recall is was Concentration, and I think Hugh Downs was the MC on that, and then Hollywood Squares.
Oh yeah.
Hollywood Squares, if I recall the story correctly, is they taped, and I think all of them tape at one time, so they taped five shows in one day. And Hollywood Squares would break for dinner, and they'd basically all go out and have dinner and drinks. So the Thursday and Friday shows were after dinner, or taped after dinner.
Right.
And they were really quite funny.
Tom, thank you so much. They got a little loose on Thursday and Friday. I never knew why Paul Lind was famous, but he was always there on Hollywood Squares back when I was a kid.
There was another show, The Match Game, where alcohol provided an important ingredient to its particular character.
Definitely. Thanks so much for sharing those, Tom. And Hollywood Squares, I mean, it brings on a bunch of celebrities from A to C list. How much of an impact does having a celebrity or a group of celebrities on your game show matter? That was big in the 70s, I feel like.
Yeah, it was. The Gong Show had celebrities, which was one of my own personal Dada favorites of that period. Hollywood Squares, The Match Game. And you had certain celebrities who many people didn't remember when their biggest fame started becoming game shows. J.P. Morgan, Charo to some extent. A lot of those people, everybody knew it by game shows and didn't even remember when they had been other things. Of course, Hollywood Squares was the peak of that because you had nine of them, and it really was there were comedy bits they would do that was all written for them. That was a pretty work-intensive program.
Hmm. Speaking of celebrities on shows, Rebecca in Milwaukee emailed to say, my favorite game show now is Hollywood Game Night. So much fun to watch. My friends and I get together into teams and do a lot of the games from this show ourselves. I haven't seen this. I've seen ads for it, Robert, where I think Jane Lynch is involved, right, Amanda?
Yeah. Right, yeah. It's based on a show, I think, in Australia. Anyway, that show has existed in other places, and it is more participatory. There's all kinds of other entertainment elements. And we're seeing some of that, too, on the games that Jimmy Fallon plays on Late Night. And in the old days, programs like Beat the Clock and Truth or Consequences resembled much more what we seem to see coming back a little bit in shows like Hollywood Game Night. That's primetime, by the way.
Yeah. So maybe we're due for another primetime renaissance. We'll go back to the phones with Robert now in Whitewater. Robert, hi.
Hello. I believe your guest name is Robert as well?
That's right.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Well, Robert, I used to live in Japan where I was very intrigued watching a lot of the game shows in that country. And I just wanted to ask what you may know about game shows came from other countries, game shows that were popular in the United States or are popular, and maybe some American game shows that may have gone on to have a bigger life perhaps overseas.
Robert, thanks. Robert Thompson.
Yeah, well, first of all, one of our biggest, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, of course, came from the UK, as did The Weakest Link, if you remember that, which also burned very brightly for a very short period of time. So there was a while that we were looking overseas to find the next Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which started there. It's interesting you bring up the Japanese. They did the game show like nobody else, some of the kooky things. I think our Wipeout was based on a Japanese game show, and for a while we had a summer replacement, which was called, I think, the Japanese Game Show, if I'm not mistaken, or something much like that. But they came up with some really wild ideas going back as far as the 70s.
Well, as we look ahead, now daytime TV is kind of in flux now. Soap opera is a long time struggle. Do you think game shows are going to be able to keep it alive there during the, at least during the daytime hours?
Well, I mean, when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, it was soap operas and game shows. There were a lot of game shows on daytime. Now it's pretty much Price is Right. The game show's big bastion now seems to be the fringe hours with things like Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, but certainly not a whole lot of them either. We're in a position now where game shows have almost disappeared, but those that have stayed are really, really big hits. Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, their ratings are actually going up from year to year as opposed to down. So it's an odd situation. We culled the number about as far down as we could get, but the ones that are still alive are really healthy.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us. It's always fun to talk to you.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
It's Robert Thompson, professor of television and popular culture, director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Jeopardy's got to be my favorite. Just lots of questions, bang, bang, not a lot of drama. Veronica?
Jeopardy's fun, but, you know, I'm a Price is Right. I spent so many hours as a kid watching The Price is Right.
Homesick from school, maybe.
Exactly. If only I could play Plinko, I'm sure I would win.
As a kid, I never had any idea what stuff at stores was going to cost, though, because I didn't do the shopping when I was seven.